You're listening to the Laugh Factory Podcast Network. For more shows, visit the podcast page at laughfactory.com.
It's the After Laugh, After Laugh. Welcome to the After Laugh, After Laugh, After Laugh. After Laugh, man. Go ahead, pull up a chair.
Hey guys, welcome to the After Laugh. I'm here with the owner of the Creaking Cave. How are you doing, Rebecca?
I'm good, Bill. How are you?
Now, we've been talking for a while. Actually, yeah. You know, I want to tell you a story that I never told you before.
Okay.
One of my first introductions to you, I instinctively hated you. She just spit
I'm
water.
I'm so
all
over sorry.
On my computer, it's amazing.
I was not expecting that at all.
It wasn't your fault, by the way. That's the best way to start a podcast. I'm telling you.
I feel like I should go get a towel or something.
Maybe get a towel.
Yeah, I'll be right back.
It's fine, and I'll talk to the people when you get a towel. Oh, where's the lighter, by the way?
The lighter?
Did I forget to take it?
Here you go.
So, by the way, this podcast is I'm trying to help Rebecca keep the creek in the cave in Austin. So, she's a great woman, and so just listen to her story, and hopefully, if you want to, you can contribute.
Okay.
Here you go. So, it involved Jeff Singer. I told you I was going to tell you a story.
Oh, yeah.
So Creek in the Cave was a club in Brooklyn or Queens?
Queens,
New York. And it was sort of, I don't know how to describe it. I guess it was kind of, in New York, it was kind of the fulcrum of the alt comedy scene in a lot of ways. It was sort of like a weird hybrid between the alt scene and the club scene.
Yeah.
Would you say?
For sure.
Like it wasn't the corporate Gotham. Mm-mm. It wasn't the touristy, all the other clubs basically. But it had like a really great pedigree. Everyone loved it. All the great comics were working there. Anyway, I had auditioned for Just for Laughs, a few years previous. I forget what year it was. Maybe like 2012 or something, 10 maybe.
Uh-huh.
And, I had one of my best sets ever in my life at the Laugh Factory. I got a near standing ovation, right?
Okay.
So the Just for Laughs people told the owner of Just for Laughs, they called Jamie Masada, there's a bee on your face. This whole thing is a disaster. So he and apparently Jeff blocked it. They were
really
interested and Jeff blocked it. He just thought like my stuff was a little immature. I act like a man boy and I'm like, well, that's who I am. So I don't know how to not be who I am.
Well, in this industry.
But then
there's a lot of those.
But then he told me, and I was like, I'm never going to audition for JFL again. This is Just for Laughs is like the biggest comedy festival probably in the world, right? But of course, like years passed.
Of course you did.
And I was talking to Jeff. He said, look, I want you to just be really personal. That's what I go for. And I said, okay. So I did a whole set about my daughter.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not like my best material. This is my daughter, Olivia. It's about how I found out. It was basically through a paternity test, and I have all the...
It was really personal.
It was very personal. Mm-hmm. It's about as personal I can get. I did one joke that I liked, this joke,
mm-hmm.
where I said... My best friend was at my apartment when I was waiting for the guy to come with, like, the adjustment bureau hat and briefcase with the swab and show up and swab my cheek.
Yeah.
And as most best friends for guys, they just try to, like, make you feel like garbage and scare you. So the whole time he's like, oh, bro, you must be, oh, man.
You're so fucked.
You're fucked. He goes, dude, this is worse than an AIDS test, man. This is worse than, you can't say that.
So I say. Donald Glover joke, I'd rather have AIDS than a baby. Oh, so great.
So I say it's so fucked up that you would say that. I mean, one of those cases, if it's positive, your life is basically over. The other one's just AIDS. So I think that's a good joke.
It's a great joke.
So Jeff calls me and says, I was so far ahead of that joke. It's an obvious joke, blah, 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 blah. And then he goes, you know what? You should sit down with Rebecca and have suss out your jokes with Rebecca.
Really?
And I was like, who's this Rebecca bitch?
Oh, that's
tell me how to.
Wild.
Anyway, you might want to, I know but you might want to sit and
yeah,
a little
okay.
bit.
Yeah, okay. That's wild that I'm very flattered.
Yeah, because he was like, and I'd never met you.
Yeah.
I just heard stories. So I was like, so she's going to tell me how to, and needless to say, I didn't get in the joke.
So shall I tell you how to do it now? You want to suss them out now or no?
I mean,
I'm always open. Are you ready to be a new face?
I'm always open to, I haven't been a new face since the fucking, the knots. Since the knots. Anyway, Rebecca, I want to hear a story about your story so people don't know you and they don't know the story of the Creaking Cave. I want to kind of get I don't want to get too entrenched in the biography of everything, but like, I actually don't really know your kind of like, your origin story.
Yeah, I'm going to go through the highlights because this is kind of like, the story's kind of out there already, so people probably, some people may have heard it.
These people probably haven't heard of it.
So I bought the creek in August of 06 with two business partners.
Was it already called the creek?
Yeah, it was the Creek in the Cave. It was a turnkey reggaeton like dive bar spot where folks like I don't know, like it was like the weed bar. Like we just did drugs and hung out and had a great time.
Oh, so you're already going there and hanging out?
I worked there. I started off. Years and years and years and years ago, I started off at the Creek in the Cave as a person who was part of a theater troupe that was performing out of the place.
Of course, you strike me as someone who has a performance background.
Yeah, my major's in theater with a concentration in acting and directing.
Okay, yeah.
Specifically environmental theater.
What is environmental theater?
Oh,
like using the space that you're in to,
yeah, and it's like super hippie stuff, like 1960s like happenings, and like the audience moves into different rooms and has experiences. Like
I've done stuff like that before.
It's fucking
really
cool. I love it.
What was like, the thing where you do like, is it viewpoints where you walk in the squares and do all that shit? You know what I'm talking about?
When you work the VOMs when you're in the arena stages. And I like, so theater, and I, the truth of the matter is that we were doing rehearsals, and on Sunday nights, the bartender sometimes just wouldn't show up, and we still wanted to, like, party afterwards, so there would be, like, just the theater kids there. The door would be, like, unlocked. Like, it was wild how loose everything was. I mean, yeah. Even, like, once I owned it, like, we kind of kept the same vibe, yeah, or whatever, but the bartender wasn't there. We still wanted to drink, so I would just leave cash on the bar, and I would, like, bartend. I'd never served a plate of food or like draft. I didn't know how draft systems worked. I was a retail dork for my day jobs. So
was it beer and wine? You had a full bar.
It was a full bar. Yeah, it was a full bar. So I like we just left cash on the bar, and like eventually one of the owners was like, "Why is there money sometimes?" And I was like, "Oh, because your bartender. I don't know the register, and your bartender doesn't show up." And they're like, "Do you just want a job?" And I was like, for sure, yeah, I'll do that. So I just started working there, and then they kind of didn't want to do it anymore, and they were trying to find somebody to buy it, and I met the people who were going to buy it, and I was like, I don't want to work for those people, so instead I bought myself a job, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I had two business partners. They lasted for like a year or so, and then they went on to lead different lives, and I switched it over to full-time comedy soon after that.
Was that something you'd always wanted to do?
Nope, not at all. What was
the impetus for that?
They were the ones that needed it the most.
Were there theater kids that you'd work with that transitioned into comedy?
No.
No.
Okay. I didn't know. My lack of imagination failed me as a young person. It never occurred to me that comedy as a concept could be a career.
Yeah.
I didn't think of it. Yeah. You know, it's not like we didn't have like
I know the feeling, yeah,
stand up or anything like that in college. Like it just never occurred to me. So like, you know, I just stumbled into it. But like when I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to like listen to MTV. Like my parents were not really like they did not fuck with music, like modern music.
Were they super religious?
Not at all. Like my mom's chill as fuck. Like she rides bikes across the country and like,
oh, that's what you told me about her.
Yeah, she's super cool. My dad's like not, I mean, my dad's definitely more strict, but like, they just weren't really into it. I think that like, you know, I was 10 when Papa Don't Preach came out, and it freaked them out so much that I think that was just sort of it. The way that they dealt with it was just be like, no, just no music. And like, I think the last time I got hit was my dad. Oh no, second to last time, my dad heard me listening to Use Your Illusion. And the guy says something like, suck my dick or something. And he lost his mind. And I think I was like learning how to drive at that point. Like, it was just, like, they would just, like, they couldn't handle that aspect of it. So they were just, like, Simpsons was not okay either.
Oh, wow.
But I was allowed to listen to whatever stand-up I wanted to.
Interesting.
How bizarre, right?
So, Richard Pryor is fine.
Pryor was fine. Eddie Murphy was fine. Steve Martin, Bill Cosby, Dennis. God, they love Dennis Leary. I'm an asshole. I was allowed to sing that. Like, it was just, like, it was weird. So, like, so comedy's always been, like, a part of my, like...
Were your parents or your dad part of it? They were into the scene, the comedy scene.
I don't think they were into the comedy scene, but they gave me access to all those albums and stuff. So, like, and it's not like it was easy back then to just find those things, you know? Especially when we were living in Germany and stuff. But, like, I was... And, but yeah, I mean, I was allowed to consume as much stand-up as I wanted to. And they had tapes. Like, I remember, like, my grandmother, we didn't have cable, but my grandmother had HBO. And when we were living in Germany, she would send VHSs, and they would stand up on them. And so that's how I, like, first sort of really got to, like, listen to it. And, like, Dr. Demento was big then, too.
Okay.
So you'd get, like, clips of, like, comedy stuff that way.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why I'm such a weird hybrid of, like, the alt and the, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, which is great.
But, like, yeah. August of 06, so by December of 07, we basically had switched over full-time to comedy, but the comedians didn't really start, like, it took a while for them to warm up to me because I'm, like, kind of a weird person on the scene. Like, they didn't know how to take me at first.
Yeah.
And normally the venue owner has an adversarial relationship with the talent.
Sure.
So they were just kind of like, just, this place is cool, don't fuck it up, don't talk to her, don't, you know what I mean? Like, just whatever, you know? And I think that, you know, it took a little while.
When did you know that you were onto something? When was the first big comic that came in and was like, hey, I want to work here? Do you remember that? Oh, what?
Oh, you know, I don't think it was ever like that. I think I met Sean Patton.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one that made me know that this was what I was going to do.
Got it.
Right? And then the first big name that I got to work with would have been Donald Glover.
Yeah.
And that would have been... And it was one of those things, like, when I met him, it was his... As soon as I sort of, like, was in his energy, I was like, anything that this guy wants to do, we're going to figure it out.
You recognize his talent.
I want nothing but yes for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just immediately. I was completely open to whatever. And it's interesting. I believe that he had gone to another venue and asked for something similar, and they weren't really into it. They wanted him to do sketch or something else, but he wanted to do stand-up. And, I mean, I was enthusiastic. Like, it was the biggest show that we had.
Yeah.
It ran until L.A. took him away.
So he had his own weekly show type of thing?
Derek Comedy did. It was him. It was Donald Glover, Dominic Dirks, and oh god, my favorite sketches. The Keyboard Kid is my favorite sketch of all time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah, if you don't know, look up Donald Glover. Derek Comedy is
And DC Pearson is the third. And then they also had two people behind the scenes that folks don't really necessarily always know about. But it was really a 5-person team.
Yeah.
At the time, it was just three of them were in front of the camera. But yeah, they were amazing, and that show was the second show that I got to. Okay, so
but it put it on the map, probably, right?
Yeah, but Kingdom of Heaven was the very first show that the Creek ever had, and
that was
Jonathan O'Donnell and Timmy Williams, and I immediately said no because when I met Johnny, I was like, no. This isn't going to work.
Yeah.
I don't know what this is going to require of me, but this isn't just a comedy show. This is something else, right? And then I met Timmy. And Timmy was this really sweet guy. And he was from South Dakota. And I don't know, for whatever reason, like, when I met him, I was just like, this will probably be okay. If Timmy says this is, you know what I mean? For whatever reason, like, him being added to the mix made it a yes for me.
Yeah.
So, they like, their first month, they did a Comedian of Merit at the end of every show. So, it was like a half-booked, half-bucket situation. And then a Comedian of Merit would come do the end. And, like, Tom McCaffrey was the first one. Andre Dubuchet was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Jeselnik. I sat in the front row of my own club like a dork. and watched Anthony Jeselnik. He made fun of me the entire set. The guys were terrified that I was going to storm off eventually and just be like, I hate comedy. It hurts my feelings. And it was just, it was so great. I mean, Anthony is just such an amazing human being anyway, but it was such a funny, like, it's such a bigger deal to be a rookie in front of Anthony because sure. He's going to bust balls forever. You know what I mean? Like, so it was like, of course I'm going to be like earnestly into comedy standing here in front of him like a dork. It was hilarious.
Do you remember the ways he roasted you?
Well, he was doing a set where he was doing, you remember with the list where he would check stuff off if it worked and if it didn't work. And he kept like, I remember like he kept offering me the pen and I would reach for it and then he would pull it back. Because it was really close, you know what I mean? And he would just like, he would say his jokes at me and then, you know, mutter stuff under his breath that were like meant for everybody to hear kind of stuff. But like, yeah, I wouldn't want to directly quote it. I don't think I'd get it right, you know? But yeah, he's hilarious. But yeah, so it was like, and it was like that. It was just like every week there would be something, some amazing performer on John F. O'Donnell's show. And eventually Timmy ended up doing Whitest Kids You Know, and Sean Patton took his place. And really like sort of like through Sean, I feel like the scene kind of warmed up to me and started to accept me as like a...
Yeah.
Like a, I don't know, like a resource, I think, you know, more than anything.
Because eventually you became like the East Coast Mitzi Shore, I think is a good analogy.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people make that comparison, and I find it to be extremely complimentary.
Have you met her?
No, I never met her. Right. I never met her, I'm sorry to say. But I, those are awfully big shoes to fill. This is all I'd say.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
you guys really adore Mitzi, and it's a lovely comparison. But I don't know that I'm necessarily filling those shoes all the way.
Yeah,
especially since I'm not on the East Coast anymore. I feel so bad. I've abandoned my people.
Yeah. So Creek and Cave was a hot club. It was a club. You know, I would say there were like five clubs that people knew about. Creek was one of them. And so you were now in Austin. So you moved to Austin.
Yeah, I was tricked into moving here.
How are you tricked?
And now I've been kidnapped and I'm being held hostage.
Oh, I hear you. But what, so who tricked you? What was the trick?
Oh, I don't want to get into that.
It's, you don't have
name
it's names.
A big dumb story. No, this guy just sort of like, he overpromised and underdelivered and then turned out to be kind of a bad guy.
Yeah.
So he's not really around anymore, but like it was under different pretenses that I arrived here.
Got it. But once you arrived here, I mean, because I moved to Austin maybe a year and a half ago now. Uh-huh. And I mean, that was, of course, Creek and Cave. It's at this point, it's really the only comedy club in Austin, like strict comedy club. Vulcan is still an EDM concert space. A lot of the other clubs are like hybrids.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean, it's imminent, obviously. You know, like Cap City's been, Lord knows, booking like they're open, right?
Yeah.
But they, Cap City's going to open imminently, I assume. Yeah. Like they must be. And then Rogan's Club's going to open.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think Vulcan's really not doing that. I think they're switching to, they started counter programming me. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But you've created this, I mean, it's bizarre because it's all the comics in Austin go to the Creek and Cave. At least almost like once a week or once every couple weeks, you'll see everyone from the scene there.
Yeah.
So you have all these young kids.
Yeah.
Some of them brand new.
Brand new.
Some of them who are transplants, who have successful careers in other cities, who've moved to Austin for the comedy wave,
right?
The alleged comedy wave. So it's an interesting, and everyone kind of, I feel like everyone's looks up to you and they're also a little afraid of you, maybe.
I get that.
Yeah.
Which is good. I can't control it. So I mean, there's nothing I can really do about it. And like, nobody would really want the sort of like sweet, quiet, demure version of me that people wouldn't be afraid of. You ask for a New Yorker, you got a fucking New Yorker. You know what I mean? Like it is what it is. But I honestly, I don't, I hate it when people say that I'm unapproachable, though. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I'm kind of an asshole, but I'm approachable.
But you're funny. I mean? You're always funny, so it's not like...
Yeah, but sometimes, sometimes... I used to do this in New York. I had to stop doing it because it really upset a comic once, and I feel bad, and he's such a good dude. But I walked up to a comic after they did great. They did a great set, and I walked up to him. It was after Cap, and I was like, better luck next time, buddy. And I thought he was going to cry. Like, it's like, sometimes you just don't have to always be the ball buster.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And like, and sometimes I do it at the wrong time or to the wrong person. And you know, so I have a bit of a reputation, and I certainly have a mouth on me. So
Oh, I've been waiting for you to pull me aside and be like, Bill, this fucking joke. What the fuck is that? You've kind of insinuated certain things. Like,
it's not my place to, you know what I mean? Like, if somebody ever asked me directly for notes or like was like, hey, I want you to help me work on my set, I would totally do that. But I don't like to go around just offering.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, honestly, it's pearls before swine most of the time anyway.
I've always found that it's weird. Like, as a comic, I'm always open for anything.
A lot of comics aren't, though.
I know, it's very
weird. A lot of
weird.
Comics get their back up if you give them a tag. And down here, the boys don't necessarily like it when the girls give them notes.
Interesting.
It's a very, it's not as fluid as it was up north. And it's, they get defensive.
Mm.
They get defensive because it hurts their pride in a way that it doesn't need to.
Yeah, it really doesn't need to. It's like if you're an actor and you're working on something, you want notes from the director, you want notes from people.
100%. I hate working with directors that don't give notes. It's the worst.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
And the idea that you're doing this crazy art form and then you're like, I got it.
Right?
Don't tell me.
It's so
very bizarre.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's almost like, well, and it's also sort of that myth that they have to isolate in order to create their craft and stuff. And it's like, I heartily disagree. You have to have a community in order to create this craft.
And I think like some of my best punchlines come from people like, hey, I have a tag for you if you want.
Right.
And I go, what is it?
There's no harm in that. I don't...
Yeah. One of them was I was getting a... It's a true story. I know. I have too many jokes that are sexual. Good point, Rebecca. But where I talk about... It's a true story where I got oral sex from a stranger in an alley. And you know, I was in my 20s. It was a guy, and I was like, oh, and I was like, and I put my hand on her. It was after a show. Put my hand on her head, and her hair moved. Oh god! And this is true. I was thinking, oh god, please, maybe she has cancer. Maybe she has cancer. She has cancer. Like I was thinking, like I was like, oh, I freaked out. I was out of there the second I came. The worst part about that joke, it's not a joke, it really happened. People are like, you probably got a BJ from a dude, you probably got a BJ. Now, granted, getting a BJ from a dude 2022 isn't a big deal.
No.
But at the time,
when
I wrote the joke, so I said, I probably got a BJ from a dude. But it could have been a lot worse. I could have gotten no BJ. And I said, come on, guys, a bro job is better no job. That was a tag someone gave me, a bro job better
bro
no job.
Job. Yeah.
And for a brief period, that was like, I had like my merch shirt said bro job better.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
But that was a great tag that someone just randomly threw. I'm like, oh great.
That's great.
I have done. And now have you ever been interested yourself in just being like, what if I went up there? And
nobody needs that. comedy doesn't need another comedian. Comedy needs so much, but that's just not one of them.
It needs more curation.
It needs more people not doing comedy in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I feel I go out for the roasts. You know what I mean? Like, typically, like I let people like I go on the dais for those sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And like. People will definitely sort of like come up to me and be like, is this funny? Or they'll watch me to see what I'm laughing at in the back of the room. You know what I mean? And I mean, there's days where I for whatever reason, I was in the mood last night. I was watching 20 somethings and I was like, I think I'm going to start taking notes. And I pulled my phone out and I started taking notes and I was like, I'm never going to give these to anybody. Like, I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm just going to put it fucking back. Like, and I put my phone away.
Really?
Yeah. Because I just, like, I don't know these kids that well. I don't know if they want to hear what I have to say. You know what I mean? And, like... that's invasive. That's something that, like, you have to have an invitation for something like that. Well, you know what I mean?
I see what you're saying, but at the same time, it's your club, and you are the curator of the club.
I mean, yeah, but the way that Creek really works is that it's really all of ours. You know what I mean?
The inmates running the asylum.
Sort of. Well, I mean, in a way, yeah. I mean, Jesus, yeah. But the way that the reason why the Creek works is because there isn't anybody running around swinging their dick. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
There is no headliner. There is no, it's the clubhouse.
Yeah.
We're all fucking cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's the kind of place where, like, you just end up at the end of the night, even if you've been doing shows somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just not, it's not ego-driven.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And a lot of these other clubs kind of are.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, there's club owners that are actual comics. You know what I mean?
I know.
That blows my mind. I don't know how they balance the both. It must be so difficult for them.
Yeah.
And it feels a little bit like a conflict of interest, but they're also lovely people. Like,
yeah.
It's just, you know, it's such a different, they are in a very different space than I am.
For sure. But at the same time, the best clubs, that's not the case, for sure. You know what I mean?
True. Yeah, true. And I mean, I would be doing you guys a disservice if I started taking to the stage.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll retire into it.
But, by the way, please give me notes or tags if you ever can suffer through any of my sets again.
Okay.
I'm completely open to that.
I'll have to steal myself.
Now, what would you say is, going from New York to Austin, what would you say the biggest difference in the comics that are here versus New York? Now, obviously, New York...
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
The number one biggest difference is that for the vast majority of these comedians, all of them have day jobs.
Yeah.
They cannot grow as fast. Mm. So they stay on their material a lot longer here than they do in New York. In New York, it's turn and burn. People are, you know, like, literally will just sit in coffee shops all day long and just...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like... It's that fucking 40 hours that they don't get to dedicate to their craft that they want to.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the difference here.
Yeah, because New York, you can really make a living just doing stand-up.
Oh,
I mean, it's harder.
Oh, I don't know. In New York, it's easier to have a hustle.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be a desk job as much as it does here. It doesn't have to be like people figure out like the kinds of jobs that they can do to get away with what they need. You know what I mean? Like dog walking.
Yeah.
And like that kind of stuff. But they're not like that here. Also, a lot of these comics here have families.
Yeah.
And it's a different level. Like in New York, everybody was single, you know, fancy free.
And there were
super kids.
Pro-choice.
Yeah. Super pro-choice. We were just giving abortions out left, right, and center. But yeah. So it's a very different environment.
Yeah.
It's harder, and also like you said, like one club that's dedicated to it. Like how much stage time can they even get with that? You know what I mean? Like
it's a
stingy situation at best, right?
Yeah.
So. You know, it's so important that places like Fallout and Roma Room and what was that?
Roma Room shut down.
Oh, Roma Room, that's right, I forgot. Yeah. Well, Fallout's still there.
My first headline gig in Austin was Roma Room.
And then they closed it immediately.
I ruined it. Well, it was like someone fell out, so it was like 4 days. Can you pick up? And I don't think they realize like that my draw is incredibly limited, and unless I put it out there, it's not going to be a lot of So there were like 15 people that showed up. It was great.
That's great.
I got drunk on stage because that's always like,
oh my.
When there's very few people, I'm like, I always have people at least make money in the club by saying, hey guys, it'll be funnier if you buy me shots throughout the set.
And that's your plan for making the club back some money? You're such a giver, Bill. Such a giver.
I'm like, you guys made some money, right? Yeah, but yeah, that was that. And then Remo Club, but I think like a month later, it shut down.
It was all you, bro.
And
you
my second headline gig was with it wasn't my second, but in terms of, you know, I did a weekend here at Creek, and it was great. It's just a great club, and the audiences are uniquely... there for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily... Maybe it's like that with the Creek in New York, but there are a lot of clubs you go to where comics go for the comic that they went to see, mm-hmm. and not necessarily for comedy.
For sure.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, 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 for sure.
And there's a club in L.A. called Supernova. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's an outdoor club right now. But they'll have, like, Bill Burr and Jeselnik and Alexis Schlesinger, and they'll pack it out. Mm-hmm. But they'll come for one of them, or Tom Segura. And after right. Tom's done...
They leave.
They leave.
Yeah.
And then you have to follow Tom Segura and be like, hey, guys, I'm on City on a Hill next week. Anyway, so... but I feel like... Creek has a vibe where these people are really just into comedy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think they're also into the vibe that Creek offers, which, from my opinion, the difference with Creek and maybe other clubs around here is the vibe is sort of, it's no holds barred.
Yeah.
It's a little, it's edgy and not sloppy, but it's not packaged, right? I know
right.
you're saying people have their 5 minutes they do over, but I feel like there's... It lends itself to a lot of crowd work, I feel.
For sure.
You know?
Basic tenet of the Creek is permission to fail.
Permission to fail, exactly.
You have to take risks on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, you couldn't hope to entertain me.
Yeah.
I watch a lot of comedy.
I think about that when I'm on stage. I was like, oh, you know, Rebecca seemed... And every once in a while, I see the curtain open in the back. I'm like, is that Rebecca peeking ahead of me?
I try to be a little bit more discreet than that.
Let me make sure I'm doing something... So yeah, and I've been having, once I kind of got that, I've been having a lot more fun there, and there's some great shows going on, you know what I mean? And I feel like
I think so, I like them,
you know. So now, in the serious business,
yes.
So the business of the club is tricky right now.
Sure,
as we've talked about. I don't know how far you want to talk about this stuff, but this is going to be part of the GoFundMe I'm setting. No, kidding.
Go for it. Just ask me what you want to ask me.
So from the outside looking in,
yeah,
it looks like a successful club.
That's
and it's
right.
one club. Everyone knows about it. The fact that it is not as solvent as maybe the New York club was or you'd hoped, what is that about? Is that just the nature of the rent? Is that the nature of the liquor license? Is it that,
Definitely the rent is part of it.
Yeah.
But I would also say that it was understood that we would need to start with a certain amount in order to be solvent, you know
yeah.
what I mean? In order to take some risks on some comics, in order to curate the comedy instead of just booking, you know, whoever the next, like, TikTok schmuck is or whatever.
Yeah.
And, I thought we had it when I got here, and we didn't.
Yeah.
And so we've basically been operating without a parachute, like no cushion from
yeah.
day one, you know.
So it's sort of like you're always just leaning forward on your skis.
Yeah, it sucks. It's basically like, and it's been like that for me since 2016. The New York one was fizzling, you know what I mean, before the pandemic.
What do you think that was about? Why do you think that happened in 2016? Was it just...
They rolled me over to a month-to-month lease up there, and it kind of sunk me a little bit. I was sad. I had never really thought about, like, sort of, like, what the ending of that would be. I had just come off the road from working with Adomian and Atamanik on Trump versus Bernie.
Uh-huh.
And, I don't know. I kind of sort of, like, had this realization that, like, the building was falling apart, and I was putting so much money into fixing the building.
Yeah.
And it's not my building.
Yeah.
And now it's a month-to-month lease. So
yeah.
It's like, now I'm 30 days away from failure every day. So it took the wind out of my sails kind of completely.
Yeah.
And I just sort of, I gave up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
So when it shut down, and it shut down what year? During the pandemic.
During the pandemic. I turned my keys in December 1st, 2020.
And at that time, you had no plan.
2021.
Or did you already have the plan set up?
No, I mean, I hadn't agreed. They were still asking me. They were asking me. I came to Austin a week later.
A week later.
They asked me to come down and pick my venue.
And where did you... so the location,
and I
think
did, and then they talked me into this one. I didn't... This was not my first choice.
It's not a bad location. You don't like it?
I mean, first of all, it's
It's large.
It's next to an enclave of homeless people, so people are nervous about late night there, which sucks.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of gunfire and shit like that, which also sucks. I mean, probably somebody gets got, like, once a month in that area within, a three-block radius, right?
Yeah.
So that aspect isn't great. And then it's just so loud, like Empire and Malaveda and Barbarella and Swan Dive. And, like, it's just so loud, you know what I mean? And the spot that I wanted had a parking lot and, like, you know, it was 2 miles on the east, up the east side. So it was in between Tech World and downtown.
Is that what happened to that spot?
I drove by it the other day. It's still boarded up. And it's owned by the same dude who owns the spot.
Could you relocate?
I mean, I don't know. We'd have to. How do you relocate without if you don't even have a cushion?
That's true.
Nobody's going anywhere. We don't have the money to go anywhere. But yeah, I mean, I also don't think that the space necessarily works against me. It's just there's certain things that I have to deal with that other clubs don't necessarily have to deal with. You know what I mean? Like, Caroline's does not have to deal with sound, right?
Yes.
But, like, sound is a big issue for my spot, and I need to have it, like, sort of, like, zhuzhed, like, once a year. I need somebody to come in and sort of, like, fuck around with it. You know?
It is, definitely, whenever I'm walking to the creek, if I'm on the phone, everyone's always like, are you in a nightclub?
Yeah, it sounds like
that.
Because
it sounds...
It's wild.
It's bizarre how loud it is just on the street.
I mean, in New York, you would never be allowed to do that, right? Because everybody lives on top of the clubs, and so everything's soundproofed. So when I was coming here and picking the place, honestly, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Because I just assumed it would be relatively quiet. But, like, I mean... It's so loud sometimes that, like...
During the shows, you hear, like, music?
You can feel the fucking floor vibrating,
oh,
Bill.
My God.
It's wild. Because of that bass, you know what I mean? The weekend that Sean was here, when Sean Patton was here, the bass was so bad that, like, I could see the light fixture sort of shaking, and I was like, oh, my God. I was surprised. I mean, he didn't really make a big deal out of it. I mean, he's a dear friend, but he didn't really make a big deal out of it, but, like, he definitely addressed it on stage, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, and Nate definitely addressed it when he was here.
Yeah.
And that was also, we hadn't done as much soundproofing because he came very, very early on.
Yeah. And soundproofing probably costs a lot of money, I imagine. I don't know.
And it's a trick because you can't really do it. You know what I mean? Like, I got a bunch of, like, acoustical fabric curtains, like really heavy velvet. That's why those velvet curtains are so heavy. It's because they're supposed to bounce the sound out.
Yeah, exactly.
And it works to a degree. It's fine. It's totally fine. I mean, especially considering that this place is part dojo or whatever. Please don't cancel me. A comic needs to learn how to deal with a little bit of sound.
Of course.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, so, like, comics who are accustomed to, like, bigger theaters probably don't like it as much, but I think it's good training at least.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. When I was in New York doing theater, there are certain stages, like the Public Theater in New York, there's a subway.
Exactly.
Right under.
And you just fucking deal. Yeah. And no, I mean, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
There's, like, three or four theaters like that in New York.
Yeah.
They're just, like, wild, like... Who goes, I'm going to put a theater right here, you idiots. But no, it's fine. Let's just figure it out.
There's a famous story that will probably get me canceled, but I'm just reciting the story. There was a Broadway show right next to, because in Times Square they have like Baptist churches right next to a Broadway theater.
Sure.
Like some theaters are. And it was a Sunday matinee, and it was an old, like, British, God, I forget who it was, but an old Grand Am of the British theater doing a Broadway show, and she complained to the stage manager. She said, "You know, it's really loud next door with the Baptist singing. Is there anything we can do?" And the stage, "Well, I guess we could. I don't know. I guess we could hang some blacks." And she goes, "That's a little extreme, don't you think?" Now, that's just a funny story.
Jesus Christ, William!
I'm just saying that's a true story. Now, I love the club. The comics love the club. What are you looking at in terms of, like, possible other than getting, like, big names to come in?
Yeah.
To kind of do weekends. Is that the call to action that we need to do? Get some. You have so many comics that adore you. Can you get Donald Glover to come here?
Oh, goodness gracious. Donald's in a different stratosphere now.
Isn't it,
man?
Wild how people, like, you know them from the beginning, and they get too big, and then all of a sudden you're like, Hey, what's up?
I know, I can't, I don't, I don't, I just, I'm so proud and I'm so happy, but like, I also feel like they live in a world where everybody has their hand out, you know what I mean?
Of course.
So I try not to, I try not to be, that person, you know? So yeah, that call to action stuff makes me feel super icky.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. I get that. But it's also it's part of the thing, right?
Is it? I don't know. I don't see other people. Gotham and Caroline's and the seller aren't crying.
That's because Gotham they launder money, but that's a whole different thing. I love those guys. But come on, those guys. They're mafia.
Right? That's so funny. That'd be so funny if that. Like, I love the idea of somebody using comedy as like a front business. Like, what a ridiculous like.
Yeah.
Are you making a serious face at me?
Well, no, I'm saying, like, I do think there's, you know, there was a long time that a lot of comedy clubs in New York were sort of, like, run by mafia. Do you know that the Laugh Factory in Times Square, when it was there, it was in conjunction with Richard Bacciano, who owned Show World, and he was a mobster.
You're fucking kidding me. Seriously?
Yeah.
That's wild.
So it was...
I mean, do you know James from Governors, the guy that owns Governors?
No.
He's definitely like that double-breasted suit. Like, he's such a sweet teddy bear of a man. Him and his wife, but they're very Italian.
Yeah,
and they're very like, hey, what do you want? I'll get you whatever you need. What do you, come on, Bex, let's go. We'll go in the back. You know, let's get the good bottle of wine. You know, like they're very like, but he's Italian. But I'm feeling a little bit naive that I didn't know that. That's so funny.
Well, I feel like
why would organized crime? They hate. So much of the stuff that we talk about, like, why would they want to be involved in comedy? Like, that seems so weird.
I know. I think it's a great way to lose money.
Well, yeah, I guess it is. That's one of my friends told me. They were like, you know what you really need to do? And I was like, what is it? And their industry, they're on my side. And they were like, you need to hit up one of your rich friends and be like, how much money do you need to lose this year?
Yeah.
Because all of them are looking to lose money. And I was like, I never even thought of that as a concept. But, like, it's pretty hilarious. Like, okay, everybody, pick a year. You're going to lose, like, $100,000 on me. And that's just how the world is going to roll.
Yeah.
It's a tax break.
So, with the old Laugh Factory in Times Square. So, it was located 42nd and 8th. And it was connected to Show World. So that it's going to take it was Show World.
Like, and physically you could walk into it from the...
You could literally walk downstairs, go through a secret door, and then
watch
peep shows.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. Until Giuliani fucked it up.
Yeah, well, it was the last bastion of, like, old Times Square in New York. You know, because, like, right west of it, everything became Disneyfied. But right there, that corner, it was still, like, you could get shot, you could get mugged. So it was a tough place to get people to come to late at night. But it got really popular for a while, and it was making a lot of money. And I think they were bringing, like, $50,000. But I don't know what happened, but apparently, of course, they just started embezzling money, right? The mafia. And Jamie kept calling me, like, buddy, how's the club doing? I'm like, Jamie, we sold out. There are five rooms running simultaneously. They're all sold out all weekend. He's like, because I'm losing money on the club.
How?
I was like, how the fuck are you losing money on the club? And so he came to, and this is at the time, so I'm not like blowing him up.
Okay.
He came to New York to see what the fuck is going on.
Right.
I was kind of his point guy in New York. And he went into the office of one of the guys. And the guy was like sitting down, and the guy took out a gun and just started cleaning it.
Sure.
You know,
you
just started cleaning
clean.
His gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. And to Jamie, of course, he was like, this is obviously a threat. This is an implicit threat. And I think he was owed like $100,000 or something, and he didn't know what to do, so he went to the Times, and they published that story about the guy, and it was all. And at first, I was like, "Man, this is crazy. He's going to get like
interesting move,
murdered." But then, same time, I'm like, "This is also he's procuring his safety because he's being like, look, if anything happens to me, it's these motherfuckers right here." And then I think Richard Bracciani, he passed away, and
so when did he get shot in the face?
He's still fine, I think.
Yeah? All right, that's good. That's
because, you know, with that type of world, there's always... They have other shit going on. There's other people. There's other lawsuits.
100%, yeah. There's,
you know, they get... But there was a lot of... And then one of the bartenders who ended up taking over the club when Laugh Factory left, the mafia guys came to him and said, hey, man, you want to make an extra $8,000? You know, so they would give him money, like cash. And he was a former cop. lab integrity. So he's like, I can't fucking do this. So he actually reported it. And he had to, like, flee the fucking country.
See, that's my problem. I should have partnered up with the mafia. If I had known that was an option.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect. It'd be absolutely perfect.
Is there mafia in Texas?
Is there mafia? Of course, there's mafia everywhere. I mean, here it's probably more like, there's got to be like a Mexican mafia, right?
Yeah.
It's probably cartel.
Right? Cartel, yeah.
Same
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Cartel's got to own some clubs here. There's no way they're not here.
Yeah.
Right?
But there's so much money in Austin right now that you think there are people who are like, I've got to put my money somewhere and just be cool. Because what happened at the Laugh Factory in Times Square is the mafia guys would all show up with the hair slicked back, with their malls, their wives, and they were like dressed to the nines. And meanwhile, this place was like
a dive.
It was kind of nice inside, but it was definitely like an urban room.
Right.
It was tourists and gangbangers and stuff like that. And they'd show up for like a big, you know, a night out with their ladies and stuff like that. Hey, do that joke about the fucking blah 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 blah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, of course.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So, and you're also a part of a lot. How many festivals are you part of? You're part of Skank Fest.
I'm one of the owners of Skank Fest, and that's it, just that one. We had one recently fall through, which is why you think I own more than one. But I'm working on a couple more. I have a couple of festival tricks up my sleeve.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's good. I feel like Skank Fest and that crew around them sort of represents, in a weird way, because of the climate of Culture Day, that they're like the new alt comedy in a weird way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessary to like label it. The fans of Skank Fest are super comedy fans. They're really into comedy. They're really like good, solid fans. Like they're curious about comedy. They're not they don't just listen to one podcast.
Yes.
Like you're saying, like these people come to see one comic.
Yes.
These fans, like this fan base, isn't like that. They want all of it. If I programmed until 6 o'clock in the morning, they would watch fucking comedy until 6 o'clock
for
in the
sure,
morning.
For sure.
It's incredible. It's just and that recharges my batteries more than anything. Yeah. Going to Skank Fest and running that festival gives me life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and even the show that we did on Sunday with Lewis and Aaron and those guys, I mean, it was packed.
Yeah.
And they loved it. And they didn't know who I was. And they were so receptive, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing, though. Like, Lewis is becoming... He jokingly refers to himself as the patriarch, but he really is becoming sort of, like, the patriarch of his universe. And I feel like there's a little bit of Skank Fest following him everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just that energy is just on him all the time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's really fun watching him enjoy life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he seems like he's mellowed out quite a bit. I mean, he still wants to do MMA.
Yeah, we've been through
fights.
A lot. We've been through a lot. But I wouldn't say that he's mellow. But but compared to the young buck that I met, yeah, he's much more chill.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd have to be. His heart would explode. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly.
Eventually, we're going to turn 50, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'd ask him, hey, you know, because he's training in jiu-jitsu. I was like, hey, you want to roll some? He's like, ah, I'm with my family. All right. I didn't know that was a sentence that would come out of his face, but yeah. There
yeah,
you go.
He brought the whole fam this time. He brought his great aunt. He brought his sister, his sister's kid.
Wow.
Aaron brought the dog, even. Like, Piper came, his daughter. I went over and I was at a cookout and like they were at an Airbnb and I walked in and it's like it feels like they've been living here for like years. I feel like I just walked into someone's home. That's so weird. You know what I mean? Because usually they're kind of sterile and like, you know, but it was just like, yeah.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
They had a good time.
So what do you have next planned? Do you have anything interesting kind of? So Skankfest is in October, right?
Yeah, so Skankfest is coming up in October. I'm going to be probably in the next like 3 weeks or so, I'm going to be headed back to Vegas to do another location scout.
Okay.
And honestly, I don't have a ton of other plans, except I'm also a producer, executive producer for a production company called Supreme Robots Incorporated that is owned by... oh God, he's going to be so mad at me. I got the name wrong again. Supreme Robot. Fuck. Pictures? Supreme Robot Pictures, I think is what it's called. Ah, this is so funny that I can't ever remember. I don't know why I have such a brain block on it. But I am an EP for that company, and we have two podcasts that I produce, and we're working on some, like, really interesting tech stuff that's going to probably, like, take over the world a little bit, and a couple of, like...
What do you mean by tech stuff? You mean, like, streaming stuff, or do you mean...
No, like, it's like, do you know what... I don't know, I'm not exactly 100% sure how to explain it, but basically... It's a way to give access to people who can't see, to visually impaired people to play video games.
Yeah, interesting.
It's Victor Varnado's company.
Okay, yeah.
You know
yeah,
Victor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you do the podcast. Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that I produce. Six Unseemly Questions and Wiki Listen. So I'm working on that, and I'm working on, working with them on a ton of different, like, projects. So I'm just sort of like, I don't know. I'm excited about everything that they're doing, and it looks like it's actually going to work. Like, it's finally coming together.
Oh, so. Good. Yeah, no, Victor's a great guy.
Yeah. That was my meeting at noon.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. And I won that, and I didn't get my $5.
You didn't get your $5?
He asked me, he said, "Hey, Bill, what's up with all your ass shots on Instagram?"
That's so funny. I don't think it's aired yet. I haven't heard it yet, anyway.
That's great. So what would you say, like, in terms of podcasts, what would you say? Do you help... curate and give people advice and lead people with their podcasts in terms of how to get it going and stuff like that? Is that something that is interesting to you, or is that just kind of like, is it just sort of like lightning in a bottle with podcasts?
Huh, it's interesting, because on the one hand you want to, like, sort of like act like there's a formula to it, and people do act like there's a formula. There's definitely some do's and don'ts. Like, there's some ways to, like, put your best foot forward. But ultimately, it is lightning in a bottle, right? Because, like, you know, if you're garbage, you're still not going to get a fan base, right?
Yeah.
So that wasn't a reference to the Are You Garbage guys. They're great. And they do have a fan base. But, yeah, I just... I think that there... I mean, there's... Well, to answer the question, is it interesting to me? Yes. I've worked... tertiarily on podcasts for a while, but I'm not like I'm not a producer really.
Yeah.
I'm like, people will sometimes come to me for advice on stuff like that, and I give it to them.
Yeah. And what would you say the advice that you give to young comics coming up, if people are like, "Hey, Becca, I want to work here. What's your advice?"
I stole this entirely from Colin Quinn. He has two rules, the two things, pieces of advice he gives every young comic. Say yes and go to every party you're invited to.
Good advice.
And second piece of advice is always record your set and always listen to it.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm not misquoting him, but that was when he told me that, I was like, yeah, because there's two parts to the job. You know what I mean? And a lot of times when we say stuff into a microphone, it's easy to just be in the moment and not retain anything that you did.
Of course.
You know, it's almost impossible to retain anything, really, if you're in the moment properly. So, and I know so many people who would record but then wouldn't listen to their stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you have to. And it's painful.
I know.
You have to.
It's funny because I've been getting better at that, but I used to, someone used to work with Aziz Ansari, and not to, like, blow him up. But when I first met Aziz and I first saw him performing, I just didn't care for his comedy.
Really? Okay.
No, I just was like, all right, whatever. But then, like, I saw him a few years later, and I was like, Jesus Christ, he got really good really fast. And someone who worked with him said that every time they would do a show, and he was kind of not as famous as he is now, but it was kind of before Master of None, but he had a following, but... So I guess, you know how comics are, like, hey, we're in Vegas, where are we going to go?
Right.
Where are the chicks? He's like, let's go to this diner. They go to the diner, and Aziz would just, like, hit play, take notes on set, go over it with his opener, talk about every show.
That's great.
It's amazing,
That's
right?
great.
And it speaks to why he got...
It helps him sharpen the saw.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen him shred?
What do you mean shred?
That motherfucker can play a fucking guitar.
Really?
It's insane. I saw him do... I couldn't even tell you. It was. I'm sure it was Goddamn Comedy Jam. It was probably during the New York Comedy Festival, like, years ago. That motherfucker went on stage, and it was like Metallica or AC/DC. It was whatever he played. It was really fucking hard, and it blew me away. I dated a musician, a guitar player, for years. Like, I was just like, holy fuck, Aziz is a rock star, man.
Yeah.
It was so fucking cool. It was so cool watching him play.
That's wild that he wouldn't, like, capitalize on that more.
Oh, I don't know. I think he... Maybe it's like something that's just for him.
Yeah,
so, you know
yeah,
what I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty incredible. I was blown away. It was
wow,
so cool.
That's amazing. Yeah. I always, because you know, there are a lot of things that comics do that like purists go, well, that's fucking a trick. That like people who can sing, for example, like people give Brett Morin a hard time for doing his, you know, his singing during shows, but like, hey, you have a real gift for singing, why not use it?
Oh, shut the fuck up. I'd rather watch Craig Robinson perform than just about anybody, so what, yeah, what are we even fucking talking about? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, I will admit, like, you know, technically, Reggie Watts is not a stand-up comedian, he's more of a performance artist,
yeah,
but who cares?
Yeah.
Like, I still adore him, he still did Skankfest, like, he's fucking great.
Yeah.
He's amazing, and he makes me laugh.
Yeah, exactly. I think that a lot of people get trapped in this idea of what it means to be... Oh, there's your cat.
Jesus Christ, Eliza.
Aw.
She just wants to come out.
Yeah, she just wants to be with the kids. Because when I started... I mean, this is also goes back to my first time I auditioned for JFL.
Mm-hmm.
All my stuff was like physical comedy. Like, it was all just...
Really?
I think I even did the worm on stage
at
one point.
Oh, Bill, of course you didn't get in. Come on. That's silly.
But I murdered, and I was like,
eh. Yeah, but who cares? This is an audience full of idiots. You did the worm on stage, and you were going to do the worm all the way to Montreal. Well, like, come on. Who told you to do that? You should have called me.
I know.
This is
the first time I'd been doing comedy for like 3 years, probably, right?
Yeah.
And but the joke was, and I think the thing that he really hated about the joke was I did a black woman's voice.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is hilarious in the knots.
No.
No?
No.
Is it ever funny?
Never.
2006?
No. The Jewish girls can do it, but the white guys cannot.
Yeah. And the bit was basically me saying, God, I haven't done it in so long. It was talking about dating. I was like, I wouldn't date a black woman again just because you can never win an argument with a black woman. Because they will just use one sentence to dismantle every argument and just repeat it over and over with different inflections. And I told this story. God, I know you're cringing already. Where I was at JetBlue, and the woman working TSA, she like left her post, and the head TSA goes like, "Hey, why'd you leave your post?" And she goes, "Am I allowed to go to the bathroom?" "Yes, you can go." "Am I allowed to go to the bathroom?" "Yes, I didn't say, but am I allowed to go to the motherfucking bathroom?" "Yeah, am I allowed to go?" And I did like a whole like dance, and start doing the worm. It would kill. Now,
I can't believe I let you in my home. Oh my God, that's
these
horrible.
These are the early years of comedy.
Jay Oakerson used to end his set in his tidy whiteys.
Like, did he really?
Yeah, I remember that being one of the stories. He used to. So, like, you all have your you all have a past. You know? But that one's pretty rough. I'm surprised you thought that was going to get you to Montreal.
Well, I didn't know enough. I mean, I came from like theater,
right?
So I didn't.
You didn't
really
come by
know.
It. You didn't come by comedy the way most people did.
I didn't hang
so
out.
So you didn't know any
at
of the rules.
The cellar for years and realize it's really just about like
ball busting
abuse
and right
for years
yeah,
and
basically.
Putting in your time. I was like, I'm a theater actor. I can own a stage.
Oh my God.
And yeah.
You must have had a tough time making friends at first, huh?
Oh, in the comedy world?
Yeah,
because the weird thing, I was like the house MC at the Laugh Factory, and at the time, all the big comics were coming through there for the first few years. It was, you know, I would open for Gaffigan, I'd open for Marin, I'd open for Geraldo.
Wow.
And I didn't know. I just thought, like, I'm doing well. You know what I mean? And it took me a while to realize, just because you're killing doesn't mean you're killing in a way that's good. Or right.
Right,
and
yeah.
So it was something, and even now I still struggle with the idea of like, well, and I'm sure you're friends with DeRosa, right?
For sure.
Yeah, so
yeah,
we're buddies. And we would always, because we're very like polar opposites as comedy. Like I would
definitely say that's true.
And we would joke about it, because he would say like, I would say, your job as a comic is to entertain the audience and to make them get their money's worth and have a good time. He was like, fuck that. Your job is to say your point of view. Who gives a fuck what they think? Because that's the most important thing.
It sounds to me like you're more of a clown and DeRosa's more of a comic, right? Because that's a clown. That's clowning.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I think I... And when I first heard that, like, oh, you're more of a clown or whatever. I was like, but I actually wanted to go to clown school.
See, you literally, like, it's spot on for
clowns
you.
Clowns are great.
That's just, that's
Charlie
your
Chaplin and Buster Keaton were my heroes.
Yeah, that's fine.
That was, like, my foray into comedy was Chaplin and Buster Keaton. That, because I didn't know how to speak. I had bad diction. I couldn't do, like, long, fun rants and shit like that. So I was like, if I just, like, jump around the stage and distract people from how weak my jokes are, everything's going to be fine. So, yes.
Or you make the joke stronger.
Yes.
That's the other. Well, or you could do that I mean, part, but, and then maybe dance a little less.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, when I was, and this is why I mentioned to you, like, talking to comics, when I was at the Laugh Factory, coming to the Laugh Factory, Jamie Masada would watch me. And afterwards, he'd be like, come here. And he'd take me outside of the club and just dress me down.
Wow.
What the fuck you doing up there? You humping a stool? You doing this bullshit? This hacky? Anyone go up there and get laugh with that hacky bullshit? And I was like, oh, okay. So then he would like do, he would make me do things like I'd have to do a set seated the whole time. You have to do 20 minutes just sitting.
Oh, God, I'd love to do that to a comic. There's a comic here I would love to strap to a chair.
Is that me?
No, it's not you. It's not you.
You'll tell me after.
Yeah.
And it was good. And then another one was, and at the time I'm going, what the fuck is this bullshit? But now I look back, I go, okay, this is actually makes a lot of sense why he's doing it. But one time for a month, he felt like I was locked into bad habits. And he said, I want you to go up and do a character.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a character that you do? And I think at the time I was auditioning for a Russian or something like that. So I said, I'll do this Russian character. So, okay, you come back next week, you do this. So I wrote a whole set as this a Russian guy from Moldova called Yorgi. His name's Yorgi. I'm from Moldova, which is like white trash of Russia. People say, Yorgi, you are trash. You from Moldova, you probably sleep with sister. I say, fuck you, we are in love. That was like the first joke of it. And I would just do all the, my babushka say, do not walk a mile in, do not criticize until you've walked a mile in someone's shoes. That way, when you criticize, you are a mile away, you have their shoes. It's just stupid shit like that, right? And I did it for a month, and it was like, okay. It didn't, and there was a point where someone was like, you know, if you keep doing that, you're never going to be able to get out of it. You're going to be the guy who does the rock. You're going to be like one of those 90s comics who has
your
like
hamburger or whatever. Like,
there was this.
Chicken?
The Chicken Man?
The Chicken Man.
Wasn't he like the last guy who got a deal out of jail?
Yeah, that was one of the legend stories.
Did he die?
He suicided himself.
Oh my God. What was his act? What did he do?
I think it was chicken noises, and then he got a deal.
He just did chicken noises, so he didn't talk.
I think. I don't know. I wasn't around. It was before my time. Rogan, I think Rogan told me the story again, because, like, you know, like, I had the details completely wrong, so I don't really remember what's accurate. But the story that I heard was that he just did chicken noises and that he wore a chicken suit.
Yeah.
And Rogan said that there wasn't a suit, so I don't know exactly what. But the grapevine story is that he got a deal. He was the last one to get one of those $1 million development deals that everybody wanted.
Yeah.
That JFL used to just, like, if you drove by slowly with the fucking window down in your car, they'd just throw it through the window. It was so easy to get. You know what I mean? Like, that's the legend. And he was the last one to get one, and some idiot, like, gave him $1 million, and they couldn't do anything with him, and he ended up killing himself. Like, they never made anything with him. They never developed anything, and he ended up killing himself.
Oh, my God.
Terrible story.
Yeah,
but it's you know, sometimes I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't see the act, so I shouldn't have an opinion about it. Really, it's just a wild story.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
There was a comic at the Times Square Laugh Factory. I forget his name, but he was a comic. He was also the booker for a time and a manager. And yeah, you might remember this guy. He was a kind of good looking guy, tall guy. He has hair slicked back. He'd wear a white suit with no shirt on. With a chain, and you do this accent like Ricardo Montalban, like, you know, I'm driving my car, I look into my rearview mirror, which is full length, of course, you know, and it was kind of funny, and he would do well, he was on TV with it, but one time, we were about to do a show, and he had his bag, and he zipped up in his garment bag, and he was just sighing and putting on his chain, and I could just tell he was so fucking miserable.
Sick of it. Yeah.
That he was trapped in this fucking character.
Yeah.
And so I saw that. So I said, Jamie, I want to try to do a different character than the Russian guy.
Uh-huh.
Just so then for 2 weeks I was Indian. I was from New Delhi, India, and I did like an Indian accent for
the whole time. How did you get to fall through the cracks? You should have been Me Too'd like ages ago. This is insane.
Me Too'd.
Or like canceled or whatever. you did Indian voices?
Again, this is like...
How did you get away with that?
This is 2007?
Oh, and it was like the club scene. Because see, in 07, you did that at the creek, and we were just been like, ugh.
Yeah, what the fuck, yeah.
It's dumb.
And of course, I get that now. And even now, like, you know, the bit I do, which I had retired, and then I brought it back just because it works.
Just
with a bit where I talk about accents and how accents, because I do a lot of accents for auditions, for roles and stuff. And I said, and I have, I do other accents I haven't done on stage recently, but like, I would say, how you relate to the dick? And I go, and I do this whole thing, German, Russian, French, Boston, New York, and then I go, Japanese, Chinese. The Japanese accent sounds like it's giving cock, Chinese sounds like it's taking cock. You know, it's a silly joke. But I was told that joke was problematic. So I've had a kind of...
Who told you that joke was problematic?
The new booker at the Laugh Factory.
Uh-huh.
So I got removed from shows out there for that. And I was like, all right, that's fair. It's problematic for a white man. This is the funny thing. She goes,
why wouldn't they just pull you aside and be like, don't, maybe that joke is fucking beneath you. Like, don't do that one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And they said, she said it was problematic for a white man to do an Asian accent because of all the anti-Asian hate. And I get that, you know, and so I always want to be, you know, sensitive. At the same time, that's a tricky subject.
We always have to sort of think, well, I shouldn't say we, and I shouldn't say always, but that is a line that is, that's always there in comedy. You know what I mean? It's always there, and some people choose to cross it, and it's typically a bad choice.
Yeah, but I also feel like it's not that it's problematic for a white man. It's problematic for a non-famous white man to do it.
I don't know. I don't think that the famous white men are getting any points for that kind of stuff either anymore. I think it's because it's like you said, it's hack, it's boring. You know what I mean? Like it feels like, Jesus Christ, haven't we already done this? You know what I mean? It's just so I feel like, and most of the people that are like to think that most of the people that are on that side of fame are also being responsible. You know what I mean? Like they're responsible for not putting out hack material.
Yeah,
they're very careful not to, because you know.
Yeah,
imagine trying to maintain that level of fame.
Yeah, of course.
Right, like that must be a real mind fuck.
But
right?
One of my favorite jokes is Louis C.K. has a bit where he talks about he sees this old Chinese lady on the sidewalk with her grocery bags, just like hunched over, like walking real slow, and he's like, I can't think of what is she thinking? She's probably thinking. And he just does this, like, it's so fucking funny. It's almost like, it's like meta hack. You know what I mean? He knows it's hacky and he's coming.
And he's going for it anyway. I mean, I get it. I'm not going to act like I don't laugh at that stuff. I'm not going to act like it's not a part of comedy. It just is so often done so poorly.
Yes.
And I am somebody who has to listen to a lot more open miking,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is a lot of navel gazing and a lot of like, they want to push the thing that's going to be like controversial. They want to be edgy or whatever.
Sure.
And so they're constantly trying to push that button and try and push that boundary and figure out what they can get away with saying and exactly when the audience is going to turn. And it's like, that's not the goal. The goal is to make people laugh.
Yeah.
Not like to make us cringe until we leave. You know what
now,
I mean?
Now, to that end, one of the things that I've, about the alt comedy scene that I always kind of was like, like, how many comics do I have to listen to talk about how they want to kill themselves? Like, how many suicide jokes?
And how many dick jokes? And how many
girls are different than boys? Oh, have you tried dating in the Austin scene? Like, come on, it's all the fucking same.
Yeah.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, Yeah, I think that there is sort of like people that are emotionally honest on stage and do stuff that's personal. I mean, I am of the same thought as Jeff Singer. He's absolutely right. Like, the stuff that's personal is so much better. It's so much more compelling. It's so much more fun to feel like I'm getting to know somebody.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like, while I'm watching them on stage, it's to know that they like to resonate with each other, like on a human level.
Yeah.
Like, I need to have that. Like, when it's all showmanship stuff, it's like, all right, you know.
And I think that's part of Jared Carmichael's success. I mean, you saw Nathaniel, I'm assuming.
Oh, he came here.
He worked
it out before he taped. Here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he had a weekend.
And
he's a brilliant man. Absolutely.
He's very brilliant. Yeah, and that special kind of blew me away because it was. And I would see him on stage at Laugh Factory, and he'd be up there, and he would just take these long, like him and Chappelle, they would just take the longest pause.
Gerard takes his time, yeah. It's true.
And then he would just say to himself, he's like, be vulnerable, be vulnerable, be vulnerable, like as a mantra. Mm. So he'd only say things that he felt had some sort of a risk. And I felt like Nathaniel was like the payoff for that, because everything he says is obviously, I mean, one of my favorite bits, of course, is all about him coming out as gay, which we all knew, but he was like, the biggest secret about me is that people think I'm nice. And he just left it there, which is subtly a very brilliant thing to say. Mm-hmm. He's basically like saying, what he's saying is like, I'm not nice. I hate most of you motherfuckers, but I smile, so everyone thinks I'm nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's those beautiful eyes. Get you every time.
And that nice smile.
Yep.
And his pensive chin stroke. So I do look at that. Now, one thing that we were talking about the other day, you were saying that you feel that sort of antithetical to the white male patriarchy ownership of comedy, there's this new woke generation of comics, for lack of a better word, that you feel are kind of at the forefront of where comedy is going, where it's supposed to be. It's not necessarily alt, but it just kind of takes into account cultural trends in a way that are more responsible. Does that make sense? And you say that's...
Well, you said a lot just now.
Okay.
So I can't agree to all of it.
Okay.
But what I will say is that, comedy's job comedy is for everybody. Oh, fuck. Do you have to go?
Yeah, I have to go.
I'm so sorry. Okay.
Oh, my God.
we'll talk more later.
We're going to have... I didn't realize it was that fast. That was so fast. It was 40 minutes? It was only 40 minutes? Okay. Yeah, I have to go, unfortunately. Listen, you guys, Krieg and Kevin Austin, we'll continue some other time.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Shit.